This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
It's 6:06. Welcome to Inside Story. You're with Sharmila Ganesan and Lee Chui Lin. Today, we're discussing the huge shortage of foreign domestic workers and what needs to be done to handle it.
First, we look at the issues involved when it comes to this shortage and what is being done by the bodies involved. For this, we will be speaking with Fiona Lau, CEO of the Malaysia National Association of Employment Agencies.
Then we'll speak with Zena Lo, who is the co-founder and CEO of Pink Collar Employment Agency, to hear how the recruitment of foreign domestic workers can be done more ethically.
Finally, we'll discuss fair treatment when it comes to our foreign domestic workers with Irene Xavier, Executive Director of the Selangor Friends of Women Association. This is Inside Story.
It is 6:07. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. This is a story that we have covered before, but the issue of foreign domestic workers not being allowed to enter the country since March last year, of course, because of the pandemic, has really affected a wide-ranging number of people, right? Families who need their assistance, the elderly who need care and so on. And so this has been an issue that the government has been pushed on for quite a while. And tomorrow, the Ministry of Human Resources will be meeting to discuss the hiring of foreign domestic workers, as well as trying to figure out how to bring them in safely while still enforcing the SOPs and so on.
So to give some context of the scope of the issue, so according to the ministry, over 400,000 foreign workers returned to their respective countries and haven't been replaced. And so I think if you put that in the context of the families that they would have been helping, all the tasks that they would have been doing, that gives some sense of the struggles that I think many have been facing in this area. And when it comes to what's going to happen next, the government is currently discussing the memorandum of understanding on the recruitment and placement of Indonesian domestic workers. And one of the new conditions that was proposed to the government last November was the one maid, one task policy, which is exactly what it sounds like. And the minister has said that this requires further discussion because it would appear to be quite impractical to have one maid each to carry out tasks, for example, relating exclusively to household chores, exclusively for cooking, exclusively to caring for children. And so that's currently where that stands, and a bilateral decision between Malaysia and Indonesia will need to be made after the discussions. And as yet, the government has not responded to the proposal.
So there are several issues involved here, right? On the one hand, this does impact so many people. Currently, according to the National Association of Human Resources Malaysia, around 10,000 families are facing struggles due to the shortage of domestic workers. And of course, many of this, and it's only going to be compounded by the fact that a fair number of these workers who are here now will be ending their employment and returning, and there's no light in sight in terms of how they are going to be replaced. But on the other hand, this negotiation between countries speaks to a larger sense of the well-being of our domestic workers. And I think given that we've now come to realize very starkly how important their contribution is to the country, it's also a good time to look at how we treat them, how the recruitment practice happens, and why this might be a time to actually bridge a lot of those gaps. Because let's face it, while we depend on them hugely for a long time, we haven't exactly been stellar in terms of how we treat our domestic workers.
Yes, and this is it's very clear that domestic workers are among the most vulnerable groups in the world, right? When it comes to work, because more often than not, they are living in your homes. You know, if we think about the kinds of practices that we accept in some ways as normal, for the longest time, they were not allowed access to, for example, smartphones or mobile phones. They are not always allowed to leave the house by themselves. Very often the people that they work for also hold on to their travel documents. And if you put this in any other context, we would all know that this is not normal. However, because the practices have been so internalized and normalized into hiring itself, right? It's just regarded as par for the course. And so I think it's no surprise that we're also seeing governments such as Indonesia trying to set better terms, because if we think about the countries from whom a lot of these domestic helpers migrate or from where they originate, then you're talking about countries like Indonesia, Philippines, where there is a reliance on their contributions to the economy. But I think there's also a recognition that while that may be the case, while we are relying on their contributions, we also need to be caring for them a little bit better. And that's where we're seeing these negotiations with countries like ours.
And we haven't even... And that doesn't necessarily even include the undocumented domestic workers, right? The ones who don't actually have agencies or protections afforded to them. Now, where we're at right now, of course, is that as of March 30th, Senior Minister Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri Yaakob did announce that foreign domestic helpers who have work permits but are overseas can come back to Malaysia. And of course, as we said earlier, the Human Resources Ministry is going to be discussing how to ease this burden tomorrow. But I think that this does open up questions now as we are also dealing with the pandemic as they come in. Who's going to be paying, for instance, for their tests? How can we ensure their well-being? How can we ensure that existing SOPs are maintained? So a lot of questions here, and we're going to try and address some of these as it comes up. Let us know, have you or anyone you know been struggling with finding a domestic helper over the last 1 year? Share your experiences with us. If you have questions about the process, you can ask as well. We'll try to get them answered. Call us. 77732900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Coming up, to understand what's being done to address this issue of foreign domestic worker shortage, we'll be speaking with Fiona Lau, who is the CEO of Malaysia National Association of Employment Agencies. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:15. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. Today, we're talking about the shortage of foreign domestic workers and what the government is doing to address it, as well as how we can be caring and attending to their rights better, really. So let us know whether you know of people who have been struggling with finding a domestic helper over the last 1 year, or if you have questions about the process or what progress is being made in this front, you can call us 77332900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, on the line with us is Fiona Lau, CEO of the Malaysia National Association of Employment Agencies. Fiona, thank you for joining us.
Hi, good evening. Good evening. How are you?
We're good, thank you. Could you walk us through what the situation is like at the moment with the shortage of domestic workers?
Okay, you know, the shortage of the domestic worker now, it is really make all the families, all those families are in need of the housemaid, you know, the house helper, are in the situation of very panic and worries.
Could you also perhaps talk to us about the regulations and how they've eased or changed ever since the borders were closed?
You know, since the border is closed, you know, the government has stopped all the new entries of the maids. You know, while some of them are finishing contract, they are leaving. So, you know, there is a shortage of maids for all the families who are needed. You know, especially the maids are as essential services live together with us. So this is a big problem for them, especially for those people, they are working parents. You know, they are really unable to concentrate at work. You know, this is also directly, you know, influence the performance of their work. And also, even say for those are now, those people are now working at home, also unable to perform well. You know, they are together with the small kids, you know, babies, old folks at home, and which they are unable to work at all at home, actually. So this is a very big influences, you know, it's a very big problem for those families who are needed for the housemaid. This is really, you know, housemaid that we are saying that this is the essential services that living together with us in our life.
So the government has indicated that they're looking at loosening the restrictions or the regulations. Have you seen any changes down on the ground?
Loosen? How about this? Talking about like recently the government has already announced saying that, you know, the maids are able to come in, but this is only restricted for those people already having the calling visa before the MCO, before the pandemic happens. So, but this is also, you know, it's a big issue that a lot of the calling visa has already expired. But of course, the government is also given the facilities, saying that as long as they are getting the My Travel Pass now, and this is the substitution or this is the approval for now during the border is still closed. But still, there are some issue that we need to concern is about the safety and all this.
So the Ministry of Human Resources is going to have a meeting tomorrow to discuss this issue. What outcomes are you hoping to see?
We hope that the government will announce the MID are able to come in because, you know, this is able to help a lot of the families in the situation, in the bad situation that they are looking for the MID, that, you know, in order them don't go along with all the illegals, which, you know, this is also a very bad impact for them. If let's say that, you know, this is also will grow the illegals in our country, and also this will make our country getting worse to control the illegals. We are also having a lot of illegals now, and this is also given the chance for them to activate their, you know, activity, giving them activity, very good activities.
And what happens if this these agreements that are supposed to be, let me go back to the memorandum of understanding, right? So the government is negotiating with Indonesia. What do you think some of the main points of that negotiation will be?
Usually the main negotiation will be the law of your country, law of the both of the country, and which we are also assisting having it. And also we will talk about the protection of the workers, inclusive of the welfare, and which our labor law now, existing labor law, are protecting the locals and the foreign workers equally. And also, you know, the control of the data analysis so that, you know, this is encouraging their workers and our employers, our users, to go through the proper way, and which is going through the proper agencies. This is in the right track.
And what is likely to happen if an agreement can't be reached that is agreeable to both sides?
We still hope that even though the agreement cannot reach, we still allow the MID to come in, you know, while they are continuing to negotiating, because we have already the good existing guideline and laws to protect them. So please don't let the employer and the family suffer just because of the parties cannot reach for an agreement, and as this will not stop the illegals' activities. You know, this is a chance for the illegals, actually. So we hope that even though this is cannot reach to the negotiation, but still can continue, because Indonesians, they are also likely, you know, they are very likely to come into Malaysia to work. So even though this is not come to the reach to the agreement, they will still coming in. So this is to make the government of Indonesia getting more difficult to control their protection of their workers.
So while we're talking about the laws and the regulations, one of the major concerns is ensuring that recruitment happens in a safe, transparent manner. What do you see as the gaps that keep this from happening?
Actually, if let's say that, you know, for the recruitment, for a proper recruitment, it should going through the licensed agencies, which is given by the Malaysia government, like JTCare. So if let's say that everybody can go through the JTCare laws and the procedure processing, like so many other countries in Singapore, Hong Kong, and Taiwan, they are only allowed the licensed agency to operate, and they don't allow any individuals. So this is also one of the good concerns to control. If let's say that, you know, our way that our government that allows only the agency, the licensed agency to control, this is will be the better, this will be the good way for controlling, and also ensure that our employer, our user, will not go to trap by the illegals.
So we have this WhatsApp from a listener, Cheryl Akmar, who says, until when will Malaysia need to rely on foreign domestic workers? And I think that brings up a question of, you know, Which kind of echoes a call for Malaysians to overall reduce their dependence on using foreign helpers. What are your thoughts on this?
I believe, you know, to reduce the dependence on the foreign workers, and this is very difficult, especially on the housemaid, house helper, because first of all, it will take a long time. And secondly, meat is essential service living together with us. And also, you know, very, very little local, they would like to take up the job. They are not interested on this job, you know, and also affecting our families. You know, the relationship of our families, our old folks, our parents, they were feeling that, you know, that they will be have to send to their old folks' homes, and which is away from the families. And also, if let's say that the family have to depend on the nursery and send their kids to the nursery, and also nursery that they have to fix in time, and which also affecting the working parent, which they have to rush from work, they have to rush to come back from work to pick their children. And also, this is a way of affecting their performance in the growth of the economy for the country. So, to lower down the dependency on the housemaid will not be so easy for us in Malaysia, as we are also already get used to it. And we need them actually in our life, especially that we have the children at home. You know, we have one family usually that we have two or three children or four children at home, that which it is very costly. It is very, very high living cost for us if let's say that we are sending our children to the nursery. And also we are sending our old folks to the old folks' homes. So this is a very big burden for the income of the family too.
Fiona, thank you for weighing in on this.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
That was Fiona Lau, CEO of the Malaysia National Association of Employment Agencies. And coming up, we will look at the importance of ethical recruitment practices when it comes to foreign domestic workers. So do share your thoughts with us, whether you think we're doing enough in terms of caring for our foreign domestic helpers.
Call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:36. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And we're talking about the huge shortage of foreign domestic workers, primarily domestic helpers, really, and what the government is looking to do to bridge that gap. But also more largely in terms of our practice of relying on these workers, what we could be doing better. And this is coming on the wake of the fact that the Human Resource Ministry is going to be meeting tomorrow to discuss the shortage and how they can ease restrictions on bringing workers back in. So earlier we heard about what's being done, what more could be done in terms of the process. Now we're going to be looking at what we could be doing better in terms of ethical recruitment practices when it comes to hiring and bringing in foreign domestic workers. So share your thoughts with us, whether you want to share struggles in terms of acquiring help over the last year, or if you have thoughts on what we could be doing better in terms of how we treat our foreign domestic workers. Call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We have on the line with us Zena Low, who is the co-founder and CEO of Pink Collar Employment Agency, and they call themselves the first ethical recruitment agency in Malaysia. Zena, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
What are some of the problematic aspects of hiring and recruiting domestic workers?
I think starting out, when we first explored this industry, we realized that there wasn't a win-win solution for both employers and migrant domestic workers who are looking to work in Malaysia. So firstly, if we look at the employer's perspective, they're always expected to pay exorbitant agency fees that could range between 13 to 18,000 ringgit to hire a worker. But often that would also come with a high chance of worker termination, or the worker that they hire being poorly trained or unprepared to work in Malaysia. And on the other end, of course, we know that for a lot of the experiences of migrant workers in Malaysia, they often face restrictive practices in which their rights to perhaps freedom of movement, or even retaining their identity documents, or maintaining communication with their family and friends back home isn't actually, it isn't actually ensured for them here in Malaysia. And so what we have seen is the resurgence of, I would say, a broken market, in that employers are taking a huge risk financially and emotionally as well to hire a worker. But the worker that they would end up hiring might not be someone who is well-suited to their requirements. And of course, with the workers, we would see that they would be essentially taking a chance on working abroad and not really knowing the type of household they would be joining and the type of terms and conditions that they would be afforded. So I think these are the main points that Pink Collar attempts to address with our ethical recruitment services. And I think one of the main ways that we do this is work through a preventive approach to help employers in Malaysia hire migrant domestic workers in a way that ensures that we sufficiently prepare workers for these jobs and involve workers and employers in the process of hiring and in the process of matching with each other to ensure a higher success rate.
So I'd like to hear a little bit more about that recruitment process, right? So I think you touched on it, but yeah. Take us through it. What exactly is it that makes it ethical? What do you do differently compared to the more traditional approach that you described earlier?
I think underlying everything is we try to utilize and improve a deep human understanding to the way that we design our processes and the way that we execute these services for our clients. So starting out, we actually don't charge any placement fees and any salary deductions to our workers, being cognizant of the fact that a lot of the workers, most of the workers we represent are from a low-income demographic. So for workers, being able to access jobs in Malaysia safely and without having to take on debt is already a really huge, I would say, it does help them access these jobs in a way that allows them to focus on being able to choose on which jobs and which employers and which households to accept. Another thing that we focus on is being able to do the worker sourcing and matching responsibly. So what that looks like is that we actually always do pre-screening interviews with all of the workers who apply with us. And during the interview with them, we're able to get a better understanding of whether we feel they're committed and prepared to work in Malaysia by looking at a few key indicators, like their attitude while they're conversing with us over the interview, their previous employment and work history, talking in detail about their specific work preferences and what kind of jobs they'd like to enter in Malaysia. So at being able to do the screening ourselves allow us to be able to match better for our clients, because we are understanding the preferences and personality types of our workers from the very beginning. Moving on to how we ensure that ethical recruitment is maintained in our next stage is how we do the matching. So most of the time, I think what is more of an industry standard is that the employer gets to choose from a large catalogue of candidate profiles. But for us, we actually specifically recommend and shortlist about a few candidates to our clients based on whether or not we think these workers would fit their specific household requirements, based on what workers tell us about their preferences, what we assess the workers' personality type to be. And as always, we inform workers at the very at the outset about this job, like the important terms of the job, such as the salaries that they'll be accepting, what the rest of the arrangements would be like, and very specifically the details of the household that is interested to hire them. So workers are very involved in this job preparation and interview process, just like how any of us like would be afforded these same standards when we're seeking for jobs in white collar industries. And of course, I think finally, what's important is also having the worker be involved in, as I mentioned, choosing which employer and worker they like, which employer and job they like to accept, with a full view of the terms and the conditions involved. Yeah.
Now, from the employer's perspective, they might wonder whether, you know, that this would be a more time-consuming process, perhaps more costly. Is that an accurate assumption? And might this all translate to a longer waiting period or perhaps higher costs for employers?
I would say that it doesn't translate into higher costs, firstly, because we actually digitize a lot of our recruitment processes, which allows us to maintain competitive pricings, which is pretty much mid-market to what other agencies are charging. And it doesn't also translate to a higher longer waiting period, because by ensuring that we only work fully legally with the Philippine and Malaysian government, we're able to ensure that the paperwork is progressed smoothly and that there are no immigration risks to the client at all. So I would say before COVID, our lead time for our services were between 2 to 3 months, which is also the industry standard. And it does also show that hiring ethically doesn't necessarily lead to more burden on the client side. Yeah. And the way that it kind of pays forward is that when you hire ethically and you ensure that the worker is also involved and sufficiently informed in the process, it results in lower placement failure rates, meaning that clients who have hired with us actually enjoy higher job performance rates with their workers, higher retention rates, where workers will be more inclined to renew their contracts after the first 2-year term, and just overall a better bang for their buck, because you're paying that amount in the beginning, but you're pretty much ensuring that you're maximizing your chances of your worker being able to complete that term of the employment with you.
Right. And on that note, we do have a message here from CK who says, you know, can relevant folks look into runaway domestic maids? It isn't only maids who are the aggrieved parties. Mm-hmm. They are good employers and yet maids run away. Mm-hmm. Is there a remedy to this common issue? I mean, agency fees are mm-hmm. close to 20,000. Why is it only here that this is a rampant issue?
Actually, I would say that the unethical recruitment process solves that, because we have zero runaway rates at our agency. Although all of our workers get freedom of movement, they have their own communication devices and access to their own passports and identity documents. And we've pretty much been able to demonstrate that there isn't a correlation between these restrictive practices of retaining their passports or not letting them communicate with their families and somehow them having a higher likelihood of running away. So I would say that one of the main ways that we've been able to support our theory of change, that an ethical process leads to better placement success rates, has been shown in the previous cases that we've done. Yeah.
So you've launched in 2019, so that's just about 2 years that you've been mm-hmm. around. Mm-hmm. How responsive has the Malaysian market been to the services you provide? Have you been able to make a difference in terms of how foreign domestic helpers are hired here?
I think I would say in our experience, yes, because a large part of our the demand that we get now is through friend and family recommendations from existing clients that we've served. And although we officially launched in 2019, we actually started piloting in 2018, which means that we've started making placements legally since then. And we're at this sweet spot now where we're able to see what happens after the 2 years, right? And I'm really happy to share that in the first few placements that are now approaching their contract renewal period, a lot of these placements are opting to renew and to continue employment with the same in the same job and with the same employers.
We have a question from Delma, who is in addressing something that you mentioned earlier, which is in collaborating directly with the Philippines government. Are such arrangements possible as well with Indonesian workers?
Yes. Actually, out of the 9 source countries that are approved by the Malaysian government to hire domestic workers from, Indonesia and the Philippines are the 2 largest source countries. And as a result of that, there are also a lot of labor regulations that we would have to follow. One main thing that the Philippines and the Indonesian government restricts is the direct hire of their nationals by employers who are seeking their services in Malaysia. So an agency would have to be engaged at any if you want to ensure a fully legal hire for a Indonesian or a Filipino domestic worker. We started with Indonesia with Philippines first, because you know we have established partners there, and you know it was something that we were excited to try out in terms of the ethical supply chain. We had plans to expand to Indonesia because that seemed like a very natural next step. But of course, COVID happened and we've had to kind of push back our plans to do that a few years. But we're looking into that this year and are really excited to progress ethical recruitment there as well.
Zena, we just have under a minute left, but I just wanted to ask you, how would you convince more agencies to adopt this ethical approach?
I would say we're already doing that because, you know, we are continually engaged with our agency associations and, you know, we just try to share our practices to demonstrate that an ethical recruitment model makes great business sense. Because when you have lower placement failure rates, you're able to have more absolute revenue and you don't have to resort to replacement or warranty or even refund policies when a placement succeeds. So from our experience engaging with the industry, other industry players are very keen and open to listening to how we can progress ethical recruitment together.
Zena, thanks so much for speaking to us.
Thank you very much, Ramila.
That was Zena Lo, co-founder and CEO of Pink Collar Employment Agency. And after this, we'll be looking at fair treatment of our domestic helpers and what we could be doing better. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bombing frustrated minds, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:51. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're talking about the shortage of foreign domestic workers, as well as what's being done by the government, by the involved bodies to address that gap. And moving forward, what we could be doing better in terms of how we treat our domestic workers. So earlier we spoke about the processes involved, and we also heard from an ethical recruitment agency when it comes to bringing in foreign domestic workers. And now we are going to be moving on to talk about how we treat our foreign domestic workers, what we could be doing better in terms of affording them fair treatment. Call us, share your thoughts on what you think we could be doing better, but also your challenges over the last year, whether you've been struggling with getting domestic help. You can call us, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, on the line with us is Irene Xavier, Executive Director at the Slango Friends of Women Association. Irene, welcome to the show. Overall, where would you say Malaysia falls when it comes to our treatment of foreign domestic workers?
I would say that we fare very poorly in our treatment of domestic workers. And I say this for a couple of reasons. I acknowledge that there are some good employers, but we do not have enough legal protection that is accessible for domestic workers, for migrant workers, including domestic workers. We have a very corrupt system, as our latest Public Accounts Committee report in Parliament has said. There are many serious concerns that have not been addressed in the recruitment of migrant workers. So we have systematic flaws that makes us very poor employers of migrant workers.
And I'd like to follow up on that. What are the main challenges faced by foreign domestic workers here in Malaysia, especially over the last year with the pandemic and the MCOs?
The foreign domestic workers who were stay-out domestic workers, many of them lost their jobs during that time. No salary, no jobs during that time. So which also meant that many of them were struggling to live. But for those who stayed with the families, their workload increased dramatically because the families were also staying in. They worked very long hours and they had many complaints. They couldn't send, many of them couldn't even send remittances back home. So these were some of the problems that they faced.
And how are these challenges made worse amongst undocumented foreign domestic workers?
Undocumented domestic workers are in a very precarious situation. They always have to look over their shoulder to see that they are not arrested, that there's no raid, and they have no means of complaining about anything, about whether they receive their wages as they expect, whether they work the hours as they expect. They have no legal means at all of making any complaints. So I think their situation is much worse than the documented workers.
And with the government now working on resolving this issue, what are some of the main things that need to be kept in mind when it comes to fair treatment of the workers?
First of all, in our legal system, we do not offer any kind of legal protection for domestic workers. This is a big gap in our legal system. the Employment Act very specifically says in parts of the first schedule of the Act that domestic workers do not get, they are exempted from many of the major substantive sections of the Employment Act. So we start with that gap. And so when you bring in workers, if you look at the Cambodian MOU with Malaysia, most of the clauses said applies according to the local law. But there's no law in Malaysia protecting them. So I think we need to see it in this context. Except for the Filipinos who have negotiated over many years from with the strong support from their own government, they have some basis for some protections. But other domestic workers, I don't see them getting much protection unless the employer is kind to them.
Now, on that note, when it comes to the MOU with the Indonesian government, one of the points of contention between them and our Human Resource Ministry is this one maid, one task policy, right? Where a domestic worker is hired specifically only to do one job. What are your thoughts on this policy as a way to protect the well-being of the workers?
I think it is a reasonable policy. We don't have to specifically say, for example, you only cook and wash. But you could say something more general, like doing the cleaning jobs in the house. I think that's fair if you're employed to do the cleaning jobs in the house or if you're employed to do the care work in the house. I think particularly when it comes to care work, it becomes a problem because you have to do the cleaning work in the house and at the same time you have to take care of the sick maybe and take care of young children, then it becomes too heavy a burden for a domestic worker.
Irene, what else do you think needs to be put in place to ensure fair treatment of our foreign domestic workers?
There are many things that we need to do. First of all, we need to look at our laws and have a comprehensive policy regarding migrant workers. We don't have one permanent policy regarding migrant workers. Policies are made whenever a minister sees it fit. So that has to change, first of all. And secondly, we should have viable government-to-government MOUs. We cannot have MOUs that say, follow your local law when there's no law. It must be something viable. I think that would help to have good government-to-government MOUs. And of course, we should look towards ratifying the conventions that regulate domestic work, for example, C-189. I think as a country, we need to move in that direction as well.
Irene, thanks for speaking with us this evening. That was Irene Xavier, Executive Director at the Selangor Friends of Women Association. Do continue to share your thoughts with us. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.